Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome into the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Kyle Yates, and I am your host. I'm joined, as always, by Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at KyleYNFL and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's weird because we're recording a podcast later than usual, but it's one that I'm actually excited about because I usually tell our guests that I can't stand recording late, but this one I'm excited about, man.
Yeah. We made some concessions here for these guests. We have an awesome show for you all today that's definitely different than our normal lineup. So today we have two awesome guests with us. We are joined by Matthew Hatchett, a former wide receiver who played for 6 seasons in the NFL with the Minnesota Vikings, New York Jets, and Jacksonville Jaguars. You can find him on Twitter at Hatch89. Hatch, thanks for coming on the Fantasy Pros Podcast.
Oh, appreciate for having us, guys. You guys got your popcorn ready over there?
Oh, we got it ready, man.
He stole the line already.
There you go. Smart folk.
Our other guest for today is none other than NFL Hall of Fame wide receiver Terrell Owens. He played 16 seasons in the NFL and was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2018. You can find him on Twitter at Terrell Owens, T-O. Welcome to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast.
Thanks for having me. And it's 15 seasons.
15
I don't want
seasons.
You to give me anything that I didn't deserve.
Hey, I'll take his extra season.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, did you get paid for it? That's the real question.
Right.
I can give
question.
Him a couple of seasons. Hey, that still won't be near
easy,
mine.
Easy. Hey, did you guys see the Instagram post of me and T's stats beside each other?
Oh, I did. Yeah, I did see that. And I also, T, you scored a touchdown against every NFL team. Is that true?
Yes, sir. I'm nice. I'm very talented.
That is that's a remarkable accomplishment.
That's a good stat.
When I saw that, I didn't even realize it, and I was like, whew, that's something.
Yeah, that's a good stat. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I honestly didn't even know that had happened until like some years back, and somebody brought it to my attention, and I was like, damn, I'm good.
You ain't got to say all that.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not one to toot my own horn.
Yes, you are.
I mean, that's because perception says that. But again, like I said, I'm a very humble guy that came from some humble beginnings. Born and raised in Alexander City, Alabama, population under 15,000 people. And so for me to have accomplished what I've accomplished, and then, you know, I got a lot of fans across the country. And so for them to bring something like that, a stat like that to my attention, I was like, man, I almost had to pinch myself a couple of times. And I was like, man, that's a good stat. Yeah. Like nobody has ever done that.
I've played in 31 out of the 32 cities of the NFL. Does that count? Is that a good stat?
No, that's not
that's,
even
that's a good
stat.
One. I mean,
it's my stat, so it is a good stat. Hating on my little stats.
Dude, you know what are you?
Hey, don't be hating on my little stats. You know what
dude,
I'm saying?
Dude, that's not the hate on. That's not even worthy.
Y'all go ahead. I'm not listening to that, dude.
Yeah. Hey, man, guys, we are extremely excited to have you guys here. We love talking football here, so which I'm guessing is something that you guys enjoy too. So we're just going to do that for a little bit here. I wanted to just start off the conversation here, guys, by asking you this. Obviously, we're a fantasy football podcast, and we have people mm-hmm. from all over the world that tune in to get an edge in their fantasy football league. So with that in mind, fantasy football has dramatically increased in popularity over the past decade, obviously. So what are your thoughts on fantasy football? I'll go to Hatch here first. What are your thoughts on fantasy football and the role that it's played in as we've seen the NFL's popularity rise?
You know what? I made this statement about 10 years ago, and I said that fantasy football changed the trajectory of the NFL. If you look back to the late 90s, 99, 2000, it was just becoming a thing, right? And then beginning of 2000 exploded because you have a 13-year-old girl in Tampa that never heard of the Seattle Seahawks. And she would be playing fantasy football and have somebody from the Seattle Seahawks. So now she's invested in learning about the Seattle Seahawks. In that time, that happened, you know, a million times over, and that changed where everybody was invested in all 32 teams. And before that, it wasn't that. It was just, like I say, you live in Tampa, you like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you might have heard of the Miami Dolphins, but you only teams you know of are the teams that come into Tampa and play. But right. since the early 2000s, that changed the trajectory, in my opinion.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, I mean, you have a lot of these everyday workers that have these pools and these fantasy pools. You got females competing against the guys. Like I said, the engagement has increased just tons. And just like as Hatch said, it's just like you have not only from 13-year-old kids, but you have like everyday just office workers, everyday workers that are now invested in football and fantasy football to the point to where, I mean, some of the football players are noticing because fans are getting upset because a guy may get hurt or, you know, have the, you know, potential to be playing the next week or, you know, he's sitting out. He doesn't score a touchdown. Mm-hmm. All these things are factoring into their fantasy football pool. And so it's just like it has blown up tremendously to where, as you said, fantasy football is where it needs to be, where it is right now. Like you said, a million times over than where it was 20 years ago. So I'm not a big fan of fantasy football. I didn't really play it a lot, you know, when I played or even post football. I've been a lot of people's fantasies, but I am keeping it football. I've been people's fantasies to score touchdowns on Sundays. So it's amazing how so invested these fans are with fantasy football to the point of where, I mean, they get upset to where, like I said, I mean, they have so much invested in the reward is so great that they get mad if a guy doesn't play.
Or doesn't even score. Or they might have six catches for 40 yards. They mad at that.
Right. If he doesn't score. And for a while, I didn't know what all the rules were with fantasy football. I didn't know how you got points. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously if you score touchdowns, then you get like a number of points, but I didn't know the algorithm for how you get points. And so obviously yards is now a factor, I guess now catches.
Everything. Tackles.
Everything. Right? So I'm like, this is amazing.
Yep. I love it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely come a long way, and they keep adding layers and layers and layers to the point where it's like, you know, we're trying to give everybody the edge that they can. And the further you get into it, the more confusing it might be to someone that hasn't played. But T.O., that was kind of the softball question to open things up. And I never thought I'd have the opportunity to ask you this question, but I'm going to, because it's something that's irritated me for a long time. Tony Romo was one of the most underrated quarterbacks of my life in terms of what I've watched. I'm not saying he was the greatest quarterback of all time, but I believe he was one of the most underrated quarterbacks of all time. Now I'm able to talk to you, someone who played with Tony Romo. Do you think that he belongs in the Hall of Fame conversation? Whoa, we're hearing Eli Manning, who just retired, that he should be a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. Tony Romo was a better quarterback. I mean,
no, he wasn't.
I want to hear just how underrated that he was.
I don't know. I think this is new to me, the fact that, you know, I'm hearing this narrative that he was underrated. I think the knock on Tony was that he couldn't win the big games, or he didn't when the big games were in his hands or, you know, at his grasp. He didn't make the big plays. It came down to the fourth quarter, and that's when he threw a lot of his interceptions. And I think he was trying to live up to the hype in which everybody looked at him to be, especially being a Dallas Cowboy quarterback. When you got that star on your helmet and you're playing for America's, you know, considered greatest team, then there's a lot responsibility that comes with that. And so at one point in time, like, yeah, he was a quarterback, the star of the team, the star of the city. He's dating one of the hottest artists at the time, Jessica Simpson. So everything was just, you know, right at his fingertips. And I think at that time, like I said, he was like the hottest quarterback, you know, playing at that time. So, but the thing was, everybody was looking for Tony to win or get to the big game. And we were never able to do that. And so, I mean, it didn't happen when I was there. And obviously when I left, it still didn't happen. And then injuries started to plague him. And so he never really was able to really kind of live up to the expectations, in which I think his own expectations. And so a lot factors into that. But when you're a Dallas Cowboy quarterback and you're a quarterback of his caliber and you're not winning the games, then it's going to be tough for you to, I guess, you know, live up to the billing. But to answer your question, is he a Hall of Fame quarterback? I don't know. I don't know. I don't have his stats in front of me. But I, when you think about what Eli Manning did compared to what he did, I think he did a lot more with less, if you look at it. Because you think about the teams that Tony Romo played with, and the type of caliber and players that he played with as well, you would think that he would have won a championship or at least gotten to deep into the playoffs, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, I wish you would have been there a little bit longer with him, for sure.
What? How many years did Romo play?
I don't know.
Oh, his total? Was it like 11 seasons? Oh, yeah, play, that's a different story. I understood that part of the arguments. Yeah.
Because when he played, he played well. But I don't think the longevity is there, number one. Number two, again, you don't have
the playoff wins. The
playoff wins, Super Bowl. And again, they're throwing this Hall of Fame around so much. You see a dude catch the ball on Sunday, and he has 8 catches for 200 yards. Oh, he's gone to the Hall. Like, dude, pump your brakes.
Dude, it's crazy. They didn't even let Eli Manning retire good, and they're already talking about Hall of Fame. That's like 5 years away.
So, but that's after Eli played 12, 13 years.
Right, but I'm just saying.
So imagine the guys that didn't even play that, like this scenario. So I'm not sure where this whole – I just don't see it. He doesn't look like Dan Marino when he throws the ball, right? It's just, he didn't look like
who
that.
Who is this?
Tony Romo. Look like Dan Marino, right?
No.
And if you put the numbers up against Hall of Fame quarterbacks, it's because he's in the modern era quarterback. So he's got numbers. Greatest, you know, when you're talking about Hall of Fame, you're talking about the greatest to ever do it. And if he's in the top 20 ever, I just can't put him in that category. I just, not right now.
No, I mean, and I played with him, and I can completely, totally agree with you. Again, and now I think, you know, it's one of these things. Now he's in the media. Will that help him get into the Hall of Fame? It has helped some.
It doesn't. That's not fair.
Right, but it has helped some other people get into the Hall of Fame that has some questionable past.
Yeah, you look like Troy Aikman, Terry Bradshaw, Brett Favre, Dan Marino, Joe Montana, Warren Moon. I just can't put him in that category. I think the closest would only be Kurt Warner. And Kurt Warner had some amazing big games and big playoff games. So I'd probably put him over the top. But Romo never even did that, you know. And I think the Kurt Warner was a stretch until he got in the media.
Right. Like I said, sometimes being in the media kind of, I guess, just pushes you over the hump.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I agree with you guys on that. Now, in current today NFL, who is the best wide receiver in the game right now, according to you guys? Who would you say that is?
Julio Jones.
Julio Jones and I'd say Antonio Brown.
I don't put Antonio in that category because he took a year off and we don't know.
Matter.
He said right now, because he's not on a roster, he can't be in the conversation. And my 1A is DeAndre Hopkins before Antonio Brown, because we know he's been balling the last 3-4 years and he's going to have another
I'll throw Devontae Adams in there as well.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
And Michael Thomas.
I like Hopkins.
Michael Thomas.
I like Hopkins that you're mentioning him there too, because he's been balling for the past few years, but he's been balling without Deshaun Watson previously. Some of the guys that he's been playing
some
with
of these
before
guys,
that.
They don't have the personality as some of these others, so they kind of just get lost in the shuffle. People forget about them. It's like they have to do something besides just put up big numbers.
Right.
In order to kind of get, you know, consistently recognized. If you look at DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, his statistics and the way he plays is off the charts. But he's not being mentioned because you think of, you know, what Michael Thomas is doing there with the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees.
140 catches.
Like, yeah, he's like 100, almost 150-something catches. Bro, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's unheard of.
And I don't think Hatchka has 150 catches in two seasons. Three.
No, my career.
Maybe his career.
I don't have 150.
That's terrible.
Shut up.
That is terrible. And this dude is doing it in one season,
he did
dude.
It in one season.
I don't, dude, I had season where I had 100 catches, and that's it.
But here's what bothers me about the perception of 140 catches means you're a Hall of Famer. No, it doesn't, because when we're playing, you had 8 targets. You had 7 targets, but you had 6 catches. It's like now you get targeted 20 times a game and you end up with 8 catches. It's not that impressive because you had so many targets.
Yeah.
You know, but
there's a lot of things. I mean, and obviously that's a bit skewed because again, you can have 20 targets, but how many of those were catchable balls? How many was on target?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, again, if there's a little ambiguity in there.
Right, you guys didn't play with Drew Brees. I mean, if you played with Drew Brees, you know, let's say that 150 was possible.
Oh, no doubt.
In today's game, yeah,
absolutely.
Again, there's no contact in today's game. You're not going over the middle, worry about getting your head cut off. You know, you can't jam at the line of scrimmage. It's just a way, you know, friendlier pass happy league as well. And of course, that plays into it. And I was on the 98 Vikings when we scored all them points, but we did it without, you know, going no huddle. We were still huddling. We still had a normal offense, and we probably had maybe 55, 60 plays a game. Now these teams are getting up to 75, 80 offensive plays a game. Like, that helps a lot when talking about stats and chances, you know, opportunities, you know, up the bat, basically.
Yeah, well, we're talking about some of the best wide receivers in the game, guys, and we've got some great wide receivers coming up in this NFL draft. And so one of the main things that Tags and I do here is scouting these guys coming out of, you know, Clemson to Alabama to, you know, these larger schools and saying, how can they train?
Oh,
Jerry Jeudy, man.
So good.
How can they translate to the NFL? So I wanted to ask you guys this, both of your opinions here. So we've got some great wide receivers coming in. What's the one trait that you think leads to success in the NFL? If a player has this one thing, you know, is it great route running? Is it, likely to make an impact in the NFL?
Right. Yeah. I think the misconception about a receiver, I think, is that their chances of making it to the league, I think, is speed. Although that's the name of the game is predicated on speed. As it relates to a receiver, I think it's all about route running. Being able to run route and then separate. And it's that, it's sort of like the stance and start, of the position. You know, it's, obviously you got to get off, the line of scrimmage, get into your routes. And if you can separate, because there are some great defensive backs. And so when you, once a defensive back studies you, they have film on you, then your game is going to have to evolve and it's going to have to change, to where you can get open. You can't just run a route just as it looks like on papers. How can you set the defensive back up? How can you get into his break down his cushion and separate? And so I think that's going to be the key. I think a lot of these guys, their talent is so superior of those in of the teams that they play in college that they can get away with certain things in college where they're not going to be able to get away with it at the pro level.
Mm-hmm. I would say, for me personally, if I'm looking at a receiver, it comes down to the playmaking ability, and usually that starts with a contested ball. Like in college, they can run right by other DBs because the kid is 19 years old. You know, he's a baby still, and this kid might be 21. Or he can run a slant and then, like, you know, just make a safety miss because he's just physically better. But when you get to the next level, the only ones that can catch the ball over and over again are ones who are making contested catches. And I think that's a big thing what general managers and pro personnel people look at when they look at body types, because most of those catches are, you know, big bodies who can make a contested catch. You rarely see a small receiver make contested catches. So when you do, that makes that kid special. The Steve Smiths of the world was special at his size because he made big 6'3" type catches. So again, I think for me, that's the biggest thing, a contested catch, because you're going to be contested 9 out of 10 times when you're talking about on the NFL level, especially when you're younger. You can be fast as you want, but if you don't have wiggle to get away from every DB every single week. They're always going to be on your back and they're running routes with you.
Yes, it boils down to can you make plays? Are you a playmaker?
Yep.
And then from a playmaker, you evolve to where, are you a game changer? Mm-hmm. And those are, when you think about guys with playmaking ability and game changing ability, I automatically think of Julio Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of guys that, will forever evolve, and take the game where it needs to be and keep the elite receivers hungry. I mean, they're still, they set the bar, for a lot of these guys that are in college now. They're looking up to receivers to be and play like. Just like a Calvin Johnson, he's a game changer. Mm-hmm. He's not only just a playmaker. He has the ability with his play catching, his catch radius, to be able to change the game at any given time. And so again, as Hatch said, you can have a lot of kids that can run routes,
right.
But can you get open? Can you separate? Those are the ones that separate themselves from being, obviously at the, top 5-10 pick, being drafted, on the second day.
Yeah.
Right. And T.O., I heard you say Jerry Jeudy. So are you a fan of this kid?
Yeah, I worked out with Jerry and a number of those guys, even Calvin Ridley before he came out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Alabama. I'm an Alabama fan. I have some ties, some relationships, on staff there. And so I took my son a few years back, I took my son and my two nephews to, the Alabama camp. And so, I just went there just to kind of check up on them. And so, those guys wanted me to stay after to run some routes and stuff with them. They were like, man, can you run some routes with us? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, dude, I wasn't even prepared. I'm like, I don't even have my tights. They don't have my shooters. Like, oh, we got you. So they said they were trying to get, so they called up and I was like, all right. And I was like, y'all give me some tights and some shoes. I'm good. And so they were trying to reach Jalen Hurts, who was on the team at the time. And so they couldn't locate Jalen. And so they was like, well, I was like, well, all right. I was like, I'm going to be out then. I was like, no. They're like, man, we're going to get the freshman quarterback that's backing him up. We're gonna get Tua, and I'm like, who? They tried to say they said his name, Tua Tagovailoa. I was so tongue tied. I'm like, who? Tua what? He tied his shoes on what?
Tight.
What? I couldn't pronounce the guy's name for nothing in the world. And so I stayed. So Tua comes out, and so they basically gave me the spiel on Tua. They're like, man, he's straight out of high, obviously true freshman. They was like, dude, they're like, this guy's gonna be the real deal. They're like, he's a left hander. And I'm like, really? I'm like, he's good. And then they're like, yeah, so you'll see. Dude, I sat out there. I mean, we waited on him. We warmed up. And so I ran pretty much every route that I could run. And so I didn't hold anything back. I'm like, okay, let me see what this kid is about. I know we're talking about Jerry, but let me get on Tua for a second. Because Tua, I only corrected Tua on one route. And it wasn't that bad. It was the bang eight. And so if you know anything about a bang eight, it's a route where you, on your fourth outside step, you're basically running a skinny post. And on that fourth outside step, when you hit that fourth outside step, you're looking inside, the ball should obviously be halfway there.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you're throwing, the ball is going to be caught right inside the safety in the corner. And so he threw the ball and it was a little behind me. And I saw him throw the ball. And so when I came back, I caught the ball, ran back to him. And I said, Tua, I said, on this route right here, I said, dude, that's like, I shouldn't see you throw the ball. I said, that ball should be already halfway to me.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, like I said, I've run square outs, I've run slants, I've run digs, I've run overs. Like every ball was on point. The bang eight was the only one that I corrected him on. And when I corrected him on that, I didn't see a ball hit the ground. And we was out there for like an hour and a half, like drenched in sweat because it was humidity. It was about 90 degrees. And I was like, and when I left there, when I left that campus, I was like, this dude is the real deal. I'm like, dude, I've never seen, I said, this dude right here can throw better than some pros that I've had throw to me.
Right,
where did this kid come from? So and then, man, and I'm like, and so he blew me away. And so it didn't surprise me with the success that I've seen him have. Hopefully he recovers from this hip injury. And then you think about the receivers that we're talking about, Jerry Jeudy, obviously Calvin really went on to be drafted with. with the Atlanta Falcons. I knew he was going to be the real deal there. And so you talk about Jerry Jeudy, who obviously played behind those guys. This guy right here, I mean, he can run every route possible. I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy. He has all the ability in the world. We've run routes together. He's asked me a bunch of questions. I've even, you know, called him, and I've watched some games, and I've kind of just, you know, critiqued him and asked him, even when he's had drops, you know, I called him. I saw on a, like an over route or something that he ran, or a slant that I was watching in the game, and I texted him, like, I just shot him some questions. I'm like, yo, do you know why you dropped this ball? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, how can you better run this route? And so he would give me some feedback or what have you, but this guy is going to be a force to be reckoned with when he gets in that league.
That's awesome. That's a hell of an answer. I mean, to go from Jeudy into Tua, that story in itself is amazing. As a freshman, and you saying that he had that much talent. I mean, definitely this injury to the hip, you know, it's got a lot of teams concerned, but it seems like actually today they were saying that he's cleared all his medical protocol and he's going to throw for teams before the draft. So fingers crossed for that kid. That sounds, I mean, taking your word for that, that sounds.
Oh, you know, dude, let me tell you something. He would be the number one pick. I don't care what Joe Burrows has done. Great guy, won a championship, looked good, played well in that system, had some guys to make some plays for him, heck of a player. But let me tell you something. If Tua was 100% healthy, if I'm starting a team, I'm going with Tua Tagovailoa with the number one pick in the 2020 NFL draft. Because trust me, this guy is the real deal. And I saw it with my own eyes.
I'm sure glad you're not picking the number one pick then, buddy.
Who's that?
I said, I'm glad you're not picking.
If he was 100% healthy, like I'm saying, if he was 100% healththy, I get what you're saying. Like, obviously, the injury is going to be a concern. But like I said, even with that being a concern, I still would take him. I'll still take him at a high pick. And obviously, like I said, use that year to obviously continue to get healthy. And while he's doing that, again, he's going to be learning behind some veteran mm-hmm. quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think it's I don't even think it's part of the consideration. Again, once he gets cleared, if he doesn't go to minicamp in May, big deal. You know, he'll be healthy by August when training camp really starts. He shouldn't be starting week one anyway. Like, I don't think the injury is part of it. Now, if you're saying, well, they don't want him because he's injury prone because he's been injured 3 times in 2 years, then that's something totally different. But I don't think any real team at the evaluation is worried about that one particular injury right now.
Well, they said the same thing about DK Metcalf, you know, coming out of mm-hmm. was it Ole Miss?
Ole Miss. Yep.
So yeah, I mean, so look what and obviously that injury that is a significant injury too. Like when you talk about dealing with the neck. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, this is a similar injury. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to be able to diagnose. Okay, the severity, which injury is more severe? But mm-hmm. Both of them have their issues.
Cons,
yeah, yeah.
Sure.
The pros and cons of those injuries. So you know, I think you know, look at the way that DK Metcalf has come out and played, and obviously, like I said, you know, he had to you know go through the questions of you know was he going to be healthy? He was labeled being injury prone.
Yep.
As well. But I honestly, like I said, me knowing Tua, and again, just the fact he's a man of faith, man of God, like. I know that he's going to come out on the other side of this. I just feel it in my bones. So just know when he steps on the scene and he gets his opportunity, the thing is he's head and shoulders above so many guys, just at the way that he obviously dissects and he reads defenses and just his ability to get the way his ball, the delivery is and how quick he gets the ball out of his hand. He had a pro outset demeanor even at the collegiate level. So you can only imagine, and even in high school, you can only imagine what it's going to be once he gets around those paroles and adjust to the speed of the game at the NFL level.
Yeah, no. That's a great answer. And I think it's a good segue, too, because you mentioned DK Metcalf, and he was someone I really did like him. There were a lot of people with question marks about him, loved him, and then he fell into a situation with Russell Wilson, the Seahawks, that it was, I think that was the best case scenario for him. He had a chance to get in right away. You know, that route tree that was limited, and I'm putting that in quotes, Russell Wilson made it work, and he kind of does that. And that leads me to my question to ask you guys, what matters most to a wide receiver's success in the NFL? Is it, do you believe it's coaching scheme? Do you believe it's strictly target opportunity? Or do you think it's their quarterback? What would you say the most important trait is or situation is to a wide receiver success?
Well, I think it's kind of twofold. I mean, you got to obviously be put in the right situation But again, you can have all the ability in the world, and if you have a shitty quarterback, then that's a lot of talent for nothing. Your skill set is not going to be on display like you need it to be if you're struggling, or if your offensive line is not protecting the quarterback and he's not able to go through his reads to actually get you the ball. So obviously situation, the structure has a lot to do with it, which is the opportunities. But you have to have you got to have a quarterback at the same time. There's a lot of factors that go into becoming an elite receiver when you have elite talent, because you got to have some elite talent around you, or somebody, you know, a little bit more than elite, getting you the football.
Yeah, I would say, and it depends on what your definition of success is, because okay, if you draft a receiver in the first round and he doesn't go to the Pro Bowl in his first 3 years, and then he goes behind another team his fourth year, and then goes to the Pro Bowl 5 years from years 5 through 10, he's still a successful receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But people want it all right now. They're like, okay, we drafted him first round, he's got to go to the Pro Bowl. It doesn't usually work like that. You know, and then the second part, again, yeah, what are you surrounded with? Because very few receivers are going to be drafted and you can be a number one in a system and be successful. You're not going to be a rookie and go up against veteran all-pro corners and then get the second safety rolled over the top and have success. It's just not going to happen. So the best case scenario that I've seen in a long time is kind of the Randy Moss, Chris Carter scenario. Even Randy was a number three. He wasn't even a number two. But the Calvin Ridley scenario going with Julio. Julio gets all the double coverages. So Calvin Ridley is just eaten. You know, his numbers are crazy, but they're only crazy because Julio's getting a double team. So what's your definition? Is Julio, and because some people who don't know ball, they're going to be like, well, Julio's better, Calvin Ridley's better than Julio because he had more touchdowns. No, Calvin's getting all single coverage. He's getting the nickel guy. You know what I'm saying? So it just kind of depends. There's too many variables to a wide receiver being successful in the NFL. There's probably about another 50 that I could go over, actually. So.
Yeah. I love those answers, guys. Well, my final question here for you guys is, what's this podcast thing you've got going on? I know I've
Get
heard a little bit about it.
Get your popcorn ready podcast, baby.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about Get Your Popcorn Ready.
Basically it's a platform for me and T to talk about sports, entertainment, and pop culture. Like, we didn't want to get on and just talk about, have an ESPN interview. Yeah, the Chiefs went cover two, so they ran a draw on third down. Like, we think there's more to the athlete than just football. And when we were playing, we like to branch out and, you know, do other things, let people know we have more talent than just being a football player. So we like to get on the show and bring guests and celebrities on the show and let them tell us about their lives, you know, their lifestyle, being married, having kids. Like, we had a host on, his name is Bill Bellamy. He's talking about, And he's talking about, he's the carpool dad, you know, and just letting people into these celebrities and athletes' lives and letting know they're regular people. Number one, number two, they're coming from somewhere of a real place. When they were young, they just had dreams like anybody else, and they get to tell their story about how they became successful, like their ambitions and some of their fears and things of that sort. And we just wanted a platform that kind of stated all that for the celebrity athlete. And, you know, that's kind of what we're about. It's not about just football. Like, we have baseball people on, basketball, football, actors, actresses, Olympians, skateboarders, people doing art, you know. And again, it's just kind of giving everybody a sneak peek of people's lives. Like, you can do anything you want in this world. And we're here. We're, again, two small town kids that played our dreams out in the NFL. And then life's not over because the NFL is over. You know, what we did is not who we are.
Yeah.
And like I said, we want people to have that understanding of, athletes are doing a lot of things these days. They're not just, you see them on Sunday, there's 16 games, but that means there's 350 something odd days left of the year. So these guys are doing a lot of, you know, cool stuff. And we would like for them to be able to tell their story and use a platform like ours.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome, guys. I know that one is going to be on my regular subscribe, because you guys definitely have a lot of chemistry together, and you are not afraid to give it to one another if you think they're wrong. So
I'm going to cut you off right there, but we clown a lot on this show, so we do want people to understand, yet we're not on here taking stuff personal. We're having fun. Life is fun. We're enjoying it. People, oh my god, he said such and such about, I'm like, we're
We're having fun, people. Out there, people got to relax. You know what I'm saying? We're just having a good time.
Right. Absolutely. This is what people never knew really about me anyway. They don't really know him.
See what I'm saying?
They don't know him.
I'm going to punch him in the face for that.
But they know me. So everybody has this perception of me that I was, you know, we talked about earlier, like I'm some selfish, arrogant guy. But like I said, on the football field, again, I never really talked a lot of trash if you really think about it. The only time that anybody heard anything about me and for it to be deemed, I guess, trash talk is that, you know, you heard the sideline sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
They never saw me or heard. I was never mic'd up during the course of a game where I was talking trash to anybody. And I was mic'd up a few times. I mean, you have to be somebody to be mic'd up. So this is the only time Hatch is being mic'd up right now. So he gets to talk. outside of that, again, this is what people really don't know. I'm pretty chill. I'm reserved. I'm laid back. There's a lot of people, they'll tell you, like, man, he's quiet. He doesn't really say much. Even when I've just kind of described myself to my kids and I'm like, yo, I don't really say a whole lot. I really wasn't this type of guy. But they Google me and they see highlights, mm-hmm. and they hear sound bites and they're like, what? You don't talk, but yeah, I'm just a real chill guy. I'm kind of funny. I don't try to be funny. You know, I don't try to be funny, but people are like, man, oh my God. It's like, man, we like listening to you even with the episodes that we've shot. Everybody's like, man, you're funny. And you guys, as you just mentioned too, like, man, you guys have, you know, great chemistry together. This and that. And yeah, they're like, yeah, you're very funny. And they're like, the other guy, he's funny looking. So, you know what I mean? So that's how it is. That's get your popcorn ready.
You know what they go say? Haters go hate. You know how that goes.
Oh yeah. But even from this interview though, Tio, it sounds like you're a good mentor as well, reaching out to guys like Calvin Ridley, Judy, you know, doing workouts with those guys. So,
but that's what I've been doing throughout the course of my career. But you know, the media, they're not going to talk about that.
Right.
Whatever reason, you know, they'll rather do a story on a Peyton Manning or somebody like that put them in a positive light, mm-hmm. versus somebody like me. And it's not like they can't find a story,
right.
Where I've done something similar, if not better than what he's done, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I said, I've been on the Nike circuit, you know, working with these guys in high school for like years upon years. So we would always have workouts with high school players, and then when they get to college, and I would always have T come. And again, it's when we do stuff like that, there's no cameras around. We're just there getting some real work in, building real relationships. And again, sometimes we had workouts with 20, you know, wide receivers who are, you know, in the league now.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was just two or three. So it wasn't about, well, this is the big time and bring cameras out. It's just like, we don't really talk about stuff like that.
Right.
We're just going to be genuine and, you know, say, give people the knowledge. And of course, that's not what people want to hear all the time. They want to hear some negative stuff. So,
right. But even like, as you said, some of the guys that have created these camps and they have football players coming in and doing things, they're putting them at the forefront, like the Elite 7 or these Elite 11. Like Jordan Palmer, I'm not talking mess about him. I play with Jordan, but it's like, oh, Jordan is giving back to the kids. They're doing a special on him of what he's doing, mentoring. Dude, I've done the same thing with a number of camps, B2BG, whatever.
B2G.
Yeah, B2G, that, yeah. Like I've done so many things, but like I said, I never did it for any publicity. Definitely wasn't doing it to try to gain any popularity, but that's just the way it is. At the end of the day, I know my blessings are going to come. That's why we're doing this podcast, to show people we can do more than what we're
more
being right. And what we're giving credit for. So other than that, like I said, you know, Hatch has been a great friend of mine. Like I said, you guys hear the dynamic, you hear the chemistry. And again, we just want to share a little bit of our world while people come on our show and share a little bit of their world to us.
Heck yeah.
Get your popcorn ready podcast.
Get your popcorn ready. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on. That's all the time we have for today. Again, a huge thank you to Hatch and T.O. for coming on the podcast. Remember to follow them on Twitter at Hatch89 and at Terrell Owens. You can find Mike and I on Twitter also at KyleYNFL and at Mike Taglier NFL. For Hatch, T.O., and Tags, I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Oh, open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.